Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome back, everybody. It's episode 4. How are we feeling? It's your buddy Darren Chris here with my gal pal Esty Haim. And we're back. It's episode 4.
Darren, I miss you.
I miss you too. And we're so close to being back together in person.
I know.
Because we're both back in the same country, let alone the same state and the same city. But, you know, sometimes I think one of the great things from the Zoom era of COVID is that even though we're in the same city, sometimes it is just more convenient not to leave the house. And here we are.
Sometimes.
We've done it before. But speaking of leaving the house, we are joined today for the first time with somebody in the house with you. And then we have a third party who is not in the metaphorical house of Haim. But here we are now coming from the east side in the great words of William Shakespeare. Or was it Moby? I get confused.
I love that song, by the way.
Who's with you? That is a great song. That is a great tune. I forget when I make jokes like that. There's too many listeners that don't know like certain cultural references. When I say it by William Shakespeare, there was like a 0.2% of people that may have like looked up.
Understood
when
that.
Did he say that? I'm like, yeah, it's a Moby.
It's a Moby
Gwen
song.
Joint.
And
Moby
if
Gwen.
if you don't know that song, do yourself a favor. Look up Moby featuring Gwen Stefani. We love a song where you know what the next line is going to be. Do you know what I mean? Like when people count in songs, that's why people love counting songs.
Yep.
Because you know the lyrics. Or Days of the Week songs.
Those are good.
I love Craig David. I will go on the record and say that I love Craig David. That song, Seven Days, is Fill Me In and 7 Days. Do you remember Fill Me In? Do you know that song?
Well, Fill Me In was his hit in the UK that I think is actually... Arguably, I'd be curious to consult our UK betters because we're all Anglophiles on this station.
Yes.
I think Fill Me In was the biggest, quote, hit at the time, at least in the UK. But I know that the 7 Days was the one that kind of crossed over to the States. But I could be totally wrong. I just know that one had more mileage than the other. The reasons for which always blow my mind. This is its own discussion of like why certain songs hit. You guys know better than anybody. Why, for some reason, there are bands and artists that just through, you call it marketing, call it taste, call it the wiring of our two cultures, even though we speak the same fucking language, for some reason, some things just take off better or worse.
We should probably introduce.
I was going to say, let's introduce. See what's here with us. They've been sitting quietly staring at me, and I'm like, I gotta bring
them in. Because I feel like there needs to be, isn't there like a big reveal? I'm like trying to help your podcast game, guys. You got to do like a big reveal.
You weren't even doing a big reveal. You were chiming in. You were talking about Craig David just now.
I was talking about Craig David under my breath.
But I was
saying jokes under my breath that really killed, that I don't think anyone heard.
I mean, I heard them.
Well, we got to give them a go. You want a big intro? Ladies and gentlemen, a Craig David joke by none other than the one and only Alana Haim.
Pew, 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 pew.
And now Danny has to come in with a joke,
them.
Which is kind of unfair, but all right, hit us.
You can't put me on the spot.
Also, before we go any further, I don't know if Danielle still feels this way, but Danielle for a long time did not like being called Danny.
Oh, yeah?
Do you still feel this way, Danielle?
Darren, you can call me anything you want. I love
you. No, that's not fair. We're both D names. So I'm
also
the resident D of my like crew.
Right.
So D recognized D.
Yes. Do you get called D? Does anyone call you D?
Me?
That's what he just said.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we call Danielle. We call Danielle D.
Okay.
I go D and E. It gets very confusing.
People, Danny, what would you prefer I call you, D or Danielle?
Maybe just Danielle. Honestly, Danny, it doesn't bother me anymore. I think when I was a kid, for some reason, it just bothered me. But I'm okay with it now.
No, Danielle. Danielle it is.
Let's keep it Danielle.
Keep it simple.
That's easy. Love it.
It's really great to be on the podcast. I know.
Making me some friends out here.
I'm looking out for you. I'm being the like typical older sister.
It doesn't bother me.
All right, Darren, I'm taking over this podcast. I'm taking over this podcast.
Is this what Heim time is? This is a lot for me.
Well, to be fair, I feel like Heim time, I talk the most. I feel like now I'm SU. This is SU show. We're on our best behavior because this is yours and Esty show.
Yeah.
Bestie behavior.
Behavior, yeah.
Don't get me fired. Just don't get me fired, guys.
This is also the first time we're having officially not only all of the band that does makeup Haim. This is the first time we've had a guest that is more than one. This is a group guest. So this is kind of an interesting thing because we
have
a couple different voices going back and forth. I don't know how our listeners are going to be able to discern because you guys are of the same flesh and blood. So there's an inevitable timbre that is going to be the same. The waveforms are going to be somewhat similar. So for people listening, I don't know, maybe we'll put like octaves on you guys or something just to like...
Can you just lower my voice? Can you just like make my voice super low?
Yeah, so you're just like a murder voice. Yeah. Alana's the murder voice. Danny's
I'm
like
the really
the,
low
yeah,
one. Danielle's like Alvin and the Chipmunks. Danielle's voice can be Alvin and Chipmunks. And then SC's can just be the same.
Or just really high. Like, dude, you can't call.
Wow, you're doing that naturally. That's not with any.
That's
there's no plugins on that one. That's pretty good.
People are gonna love that.
That's really gonna. It's gonna sound really nice coming out of people's speakers when they're driving in the car on the way to work.
Oh, that sounds like personal hell to me. Guys, I have so many questions. So many questions.
Okay.
First of all, now I guess this is just me interviewing Haim. This is great. This is a dream
come
true, guys.
Let's do it.
Well, no, I think I'm pretty sure I'm probably going to learn something new about my sisters as well.
That
I'm
must
counting
happen
on
all
it.
The time when you guys are doing interviews, because me, when I'm on the other side of a press line and it is just me, I can kind of, you know, I mean, you guys must feel this way all the time because they're not going to isolate each one of you. Maybe they'll try and do it out of politeness. Like, you do this, what do you think about this? But when they interview three of you, you know, you guys kind of have to collectively hive mind answers. Does this drive you guys nuts sometimes, or does it like basically what I'm doing right now?
No. I mean, I don't know.
We don't really think about it.
You just took the microphone out of my hand.
Well, there you go. Case in point, you have to like agree immediately. Where I'm sure things are revealed when you're answering questions that you're like, I didn't know that. Because like,
I mean, you know. I think it's no secret that like Danielle doesn't really. I feel like we're ragging on Danielle already.
Yeah,
I don't mean
stop?
To rag on you, but Danielle doesn't really talk. But
I was just trying to be protective of you.
Stop picking on me.
That's all.
I think everybody knows being the quiet riot in the band is not only tantamount to the success of the band, it's also like prerequisite. So it's the Lord's work.
It's definitely better than being like the annoying younger sister, which is my stereotype.
Which you are.
So I totally am.
I'm
or
kidding.
Apparently not.
I winked when I said that. I'm not a jerk.
But I know. I mean, I feel like, let's answer some questions. I'm excited to hear what questions you have for us.
Okay, so you guys, you know, much to, I'm sure, the disappointment of our listeners, especially the Haim fans, I just assumed, or maybe they assumed, you know, they have like content houses, like these TikTok houses live together. When I was a kid, I loved the movie Help. As a big Beatles fan, I watched it every day for my birthday. And in that movie, all the Beatles lived together in this really long, like, it was like a Muse house in London, and each door, which looked like four different houses, actually went to the same house, and they lived together in this house. And I always thought that was super cool. That if when I was older and I was in a band, surely I would live and hang out with my bandmates. But I guess you guys did that your whole life. So I guess this is a moot point because you did it and then you got to be your own women in your own life, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, Danielle was the first one to leave the Hive because Essie went to college in L.A. Danielle
That's spelled
left...
H-A-I-V-E. right?
Yes.
Hive.
But Danielle went on, I mean, Danielle, I'm speaking for you. Danielle went on tour when she was 19, so she left. Danielle, would you like to continue?
Elaborate?
No, Danielle? You're doing great. You're just keep going.
I'm being nice. Anyway, so Danielle left. And I think once Danielle left and came home and kind of was like, there is life outside of the valley and, you know, you're going to be okay. I feel like that kind of gave me confidence to leave. Also, after our first tour, I came home and lived with my parents. And it was...
How old were you, Alana?
I was like 21. Because I left for tour when I was 20. And we were gone for like a year. And then I came home. It was like, I think I was maybe almost about to turn 22. And I was like living with my parents. And the same rules that I had when I was like 15 applied when I was 22.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, I'm a full-blown adult that's like been by herself. Well, with Essie and Danielle touring the world at this point. And then I came home and it was like my curfew was midnight. Yeah. Which ruled for a 22-year-old. It's just a great time. And at midnight, my parents would call me and be like, where are you? And I was like, oh, my God. So then I ended up moving out down the street from my parents because I didn't want to leave the valley. And then one day, I've definitely told you guys this story before. But like one day I was like super hungover and my parents, because I didn't pick up my phone, I think I like had woken up at like 1 in the afternoon as like a, you know, young 20-year-old would. And I was super hungover and I was like eating Fruit Loops or some shit. I don't know. I was like eating some fucking cereal.
That's acceptable. Fruit Loops is acceptable.
Yeah, like watching some sort of cartoon probably. And my parents just walked into my apartment. They just like opened the door. They had the key to my apartment. And walked in, and I was like, I could have been doing so much more crazy shit. God I was sitting on my couch eating fucking Fruit Loops. Thank God.
I feel like that, if I was a parent, I'd be like, this is staged. What's with the Fruit Loops?
Yeah, like, what are you hiding? No, yeah. It's called, I'm 3 years old. Like, I love watching cartoons and eating Fruit Loops. That's just me. Yeah, but then I was like, okay, I need to leave. So, yeah, that's a very long answer to, yeah, we don't live together.
I mean, that is the kind of age. I feel like even if you do the cookie cutter college thing, there is a point where if you graduate around anywhere from 21 to 22 years old, before you, you know, maybe get your own place where you move out of the city or whatever it is, there is that sort of purgatory zone where you do. I remember like graduating and like having this whole life planned of like, I was going to move to LA, I was going to move to New York. And yeah, I was at home and it was weird because I would be like, but I'm like a big kid and I would want to go to bars and stuff. But also, I don't want to like piss my parents off.
Totally. Yeah. No, I would never want to piss my parents. Also, my parents are the best parents of all time, but they were like super strict growing up. But like, I mean, something worked. I don't know.
That's like a huge trend though, like with the pandemic though. Not trend, but that's like what I feel like a lot of people have been just moving home.
Yeah, seniors.
Yeah, a lot of stories to be told.
Honestly, I kind of miss living with my parents now because I like my mom used to make me fun snacks and love me all the time. And I don't have that anymore. I live on my own.
You gotta rough it out here like the rest of us, buying our own snacks.
I miss
doing our
mom.
Own laundry. Like the savages we are.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, did everybody here, I said post-grad, I meant undergrad. Recent undergrads have also been like starting their, you know, their millennial whatevers, or I guess Gen Z whatevers from their like your parents, you know, from their parents' houses.
Yes.
Did everybody here go to college?
Other than Esty?
Yeah.
Esty went to college.
Esty went to UCLA. I went to Valley College, which is a great community college in the Valley.
The reason why I asked is because you guys went on tour relatively quickly, I remember, right? Like, I know you guys have told the story quite a bit. So
yeah,
I don't have to go into it.
Like Alana said, I went on tour in this guy, Michael Runyon's band, who opened up for Jenny Lewis. And I went on that tour and we were huge. I feel like, have you guys talked about Marlo Kiley at all or Jenny Lewis? I don't know.
For our listeners who aren't necessarily like dialed into, I don't know, early 2000s or Los Angeles music, of kind of the Mount Rushmore of the noughties, early noughties, especially Los Angeles scenes, I would put Rilo Kiley pretty high up in I think, the contributors to anybody our age who were like into playing music, especially for women. And I feel like Jenny Lewis, who's the front woman songwriter for Rilo Kiley, you guys had an in with her pretty early on before you started sort of taking off as a band. And I know she was pretty pivotal in getting you guys involved in a lot of shit. Or correct me, I don't know if that's true, but how does one go to community college and suddenly find herself playing adjacent to Rilo Kiley?
Yeah, I was at there was this free night at Spaceland, which is now the Satellite.
The satellite. Yeah.
I hope it's still open, but it was a free night every Monday, and Jenny's boyfriend at the time, Jonathan Rice, was playing like I think a residency, and so I went with my friend Savannah, and we
just
ended
as fans.
Up just as fans, yeah, because it was free. So I was like, great. I don't, you know, usually it was like $10 or something, and I was going to community college, and I was the shoe girl at American Rag. I sold shoes. So I was like, let's go, you know, it was like $2 beer too. So I was like, great, like we'll grab some beers and see a free show. And we happened to like kind of make friends with, like started talking to this guy, Michael Runyon, who we had met before, but like not like just in passing. And we started talking, and he was like, oh, I'm actually going on tour with Jenny Lewis. Like my friend, Jenny Lewis, I'm opening up for her and my drummer can't go. Do you, cause he knew I was a musician. He's like, do you play drums? And I was like, even though it wasn't my main instrument, our dad's a drummer and I hadn't really played drums that much, you know, but I just like my weird, like, inner voice was like, just say yes, just do it. So I was
like,
I play drums, you know.
It's like when they ask actors,
make it, Danielle. Make it
yeah,
to
when
me.
They ask young actors, can you ride a horse? They're like, ride them. I breed them, of course. And then
exactly.
You go to the set, and you're like, Jesus Christ, I don't know how to ride a horse.
So
wait,
I
so this
said,
guy
yeah.
asks you point blank, you know, at this show, you meet for the first time, and you just, I don't know, chat or just starting a conversation. He's like, I mean, this almost seems too, talk about suspicious. This is like one of these fantasies that I used to have when I would go see bands, and it's like,
right.
Oh no, Billy Joe Armstrong has broken his hand, like in fucking Back to the Future.
Can
anybody play? And I go, I could do it. And then I joined Green Day for the next 15 years of my life. Like that's the shit I used to fantasize about. So you're telling me that this
funny.
Guy's
yeah,
like,
it was so
hey,
random.
We need a drummer, and you were just there. You're that
yeah.
piece of shit that
and
got
I was
that
like,
fantasy.
Yeah, I was yes. like, yeah, I do play drums. And he was like, oh my gosh, wow. Well, we're going on tour in like 10 days. Do you want to go?
Was
and
there any
was
audition
like,
process?
Course.
Any checks and balances?
Yeah,
here?
I played. He like came over to my house and like we kind of jammed a bit. And he was like, "Great, you got the job." And I was like, "Holy shit!" So I had to like tell all of my professors because I was going to be gone for like, I think I was going to be gone for like 3 weeks. So I had to tell my professors, and then I quit my job at American Rag because they weren't going to let me go. Yeah, and I went and we opened for her, and I was like such a huge fan, and I'll never forget on the first night we were like first of three, and then there was another band after us, and then it was Jenny, and I like found my, this is so creepy, but like I just was like found myself side stage, and Jenny was like right next to me, like looking at the next band, like the one right before her. We were all just kind of like vibing, and I was like, oh my God, that's Jenny Lewis. I can't believe it. And we ended up kind of like, you know, just saying hi here and there throughout the whole tour. And then, you know, kind of became friendly. And she's, again, like we were such huge fans of hers growing up. So it was a big deal for me. And then when it came time for her to do her next tour a couple months later, she actually asked me to be her guitarist, which was huge. And that kind of started, then I toured with her for like a couple months. And that was my like first official like gig as a guitarist, as like Yeah, as like a backup guitarist.
Wow. God, Jenny Lewis. Of the Jenny Lewis of Beverly Hills, Troop Beverly Hills. I mean, like, she's a big deal, guys. I forget the character's name.
Yeah, she's the biggest deal.
Also, for the record, just to really bring it full circle, that's what happened to Guy Patterson in That Thing You Do.
That's right.
I was just about to say That Thing You Do.
You're totally right. That's why it seems like such a cliche in my brain, because it's like a trope.
I'm off my podcast game. I'm so off my podcast game. I was literally about to say, it's like That Thing You Do. And then I was like, don't say it. Don't say that. That's embarrassing. Don't be embarrassing, Alana.
Don't worry. I said it. And I am embarrassing, and that's okay.
The hive mind did its thing, and by the you guys are next to each other, so the airwave, the brain waves were Bluetoothed into each other.
Yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This is something that I think is so marvelous that I'm sure you guys would talk about all the time, for better or for worse, and I think for most of it is for the better, is, you know, being women in a music community. So I've never been lucky enough to be a woman, but I've always really admired the way that there is this, like, come here, kid, I got you kind of club. Like, all right, like, we're going to look out for each other. We're going to really try and keep this going and keep our power and our support system. And it sounds like Jenny kind of had that. I can only imagine,
yes,
being, you know, herself.
Absolutely.
She was the young
100%.
Buck kid. And so she really probably responded to you in a way that you probably didn't even think of at the time, because you're just like a fangirl. But, like, you know, like, how often is she going to be on tour? Like, oh, shit, cool, the drummer's like this cool chick drummer from L.A. She's like me. Like, I want, you know, she probably sees a lot of herself in you guys.
Well, she's always brought girls on tour. Like, the drummer on the tour that I was on was Barbara Greska, who's like my favorite drummer. She's incredible. She's also like an L.A. girl. And yeah,
wait,
I think even like
of Ethan Greska.
Yes, Ethan,
yes.
Greska's sister.
Wait, how do you know Ethan?
Darren's a big Ethan fan.
Are you?
He doesn't understand. Okay, you didn't see what I just did. I just kind of melted a little bit. So a lot of my conversation with Esty has to do with my obsession of LA songwriter, musician, producer culture. And what I'm finding is that not only does Esty work with these fucking people, that you all grew up together, and it drives me mad.
I'm about to blow your mind. I fucking dated
it.
Ethan. Ethan was my first boyfriend.
I think that's what Esty told me.
I
had a similar reaction. Yeah, I had a similar reaction.
Ethan, who is like by far the best boyfriend I ever had. Like, he was the nicest.
On the record, wow.
On the record. I've said it a million times. He's like the only boyfriend that ever treated me like
with
the best,
respect.
With respect. I mean, let me tell you.
I'd love to have him on the show, and he's going to be like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Alana really treated me like shit.
Oh, my God, No. It was great. I'm so happy for him. He is honestly one of the most talented people of all time. And he's
wait, and I'm going to blow your mind. I'm going to blow your mind again.
Okay, let
Ethan,
me put on some...
No. Ethan actually sold... Ethan sold merch on the Jenny Lewis tour that I was on.
And that's how I met
incredible.
Him.
Incredible.
That's how Alana met him.
For our listeners that don't know who Ethan Gruska is, he is
a phenomenally talented
singer-songwriter in his own right. His music is fantastic. He has a record that he put about two, three years ago. I forget. What's the one that opens with The Valley? That song is outstanding. He's just an outstanding songwriter. But he's been producing for a lot of artists. He did the Bridgers record. I think, did he do anything on your guys' last one?
He didn't. He's never worked with me with us before. I mean, I would love to. It would be so funny. We haven't, I haven't seen him in a long time. I mean, we dated when I was 17. That was my first boyfriend ever. Like, so I'm
no, but I feel like it was like 30. Barbara and I, I feel like we kind of conspired to set up our younger siblings on that tour.
LA musician mafia.
To be some more LA folklore. So Barbara went to CalArts, and I was dating someone at the time that knew Barbara from CalArts, who was like, you have to see this drummer. She's amazing. This was like in 2007. And I found a vlog. Like, she had a vlog.
Wow.
And I was the creepy, obsessed person that was, like, obsessed with this girl that I did not know, that I had never met before. And her name was Barbara Gruska. And I didn't know any, I didn't know her, but I was a big fan of hers. And then when Danielle went on tour with Jenny, and I was like, oh, my God, you're going on tour with Barbara Gruska? She's incredible.
This is so amazing. This brings up something that I know I keep hunting away at the LA music scene. And I think I get really upset when people say things like, oh, well, you know, that's what happens when you're from LA. And I'm like, you have to understand that if we lived in a coal mining town, right? Like our parents, our peers, everything that we did in school, everything around us would be kind of geared towards the system of running a coal mining town. Like, people would be selling pickaxes.
Totally.
We'd be knowing how to do shit. And that's something that I really admire. Again, not being from Los Angeles, not too far away, but far enough to where I'm not like in the sort of in the center of like the egg, as it were. That's not a fucking expression. But there's like so many musicians. Just the fact that they're like, yeah, and I grew up with this person. And, you know, I don't know how old Barbara was when she was doing these vlogs, but like, this was a viable like trade. You know, like, it goes beyond a hobby. It's like, I'm in an ecosystem where if like I keep playing and I keep shedding, I keep smashing it, like, I'll be on tour, and I'll be making records, I'll be doing sessions, and I'll be fucking a professional musician,
yes,
like a tradesman.
And it's so cool. A lot of it was just going, you know, for us, it was just like opening up for anyone that we could open up for.
That's
going
true.
Out to shows, like I said, going to the free, I mean, the free Monday night, like, you know, venue, like, it was like all on the East Side, like every Monday, it was like every venue was free, just like constantly going out, constantly trying to, like, you know, trying to meet other people who played music. That was kind of what,
you know, what's
we
sad
did.
That I found out today. Did you know that the Bootleg is closing?
No,
I just
way.
Saw
really?
That. I
no!
just saw that.
Another one bites the dust.
Oh,
damn,
it's so
great shows
sad.
There.
Wait, can I tell you, like, actually, the like to actually bring this full fucking circle? It's in, this is like the most.
Please.
I don't know if I've ever said this story before. I don't know
what?
If I have.
See,
I might have.
I'm learning new stuff.
This is
that
thing I do exclusive. Go for it.
I might have, but I'm not sure. So, like, I like 100% believe in signs. Like, I feel like, you know, like my ancestors send me signs all the time. You just have to like listen.
You're the first Jewish girl to ever tell me this. Go on.
I know. Okay. Do you want me to tell this story, Darren?
I do.
Do you want me to tell this story?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
That was a compliment.
Thank you. Oh, mia. Thank you. Anyways, so when we played the Fillmore in San Francisco, which is like one of the best venues of all time, like super fucking iconic. Sorry, I keep saying the F word. Sorry to your producer that's going to have to bleep me out.
Fuck.
But the Fillmore is super duper iconic. I mean, everyone's played there. And I remember it was a big deal for us to play there on our first show. Not our first show, on our first tour in America. And we had played the Fillmore with Julian Casablancas, like, opening for him. And that was a huge deal. So, like, playing it on our own as Chaim was, like, this big, like, oh my God moment. Like, holy crap. And the venue was closed. We had just done soundcheck. I really needed to pee. And the backstage bathroom was locked because someone was in there. And I was like, cool, I'll just go into, you know, the front of house bathroom. Like, it's fine. I'll just go to, like, the venue's not open. So I go to like this big bathroom, has like a million stalls. No one is in there. Again, the venue was closed. There is no one here.
It was like 5 p.m.
5 p.m. We had just finished
soundcheck.
Yeah, it's
too early for the film.
I pee, as you do in the bathroom. And I come out and I'm washing my hands. And on the soap dispenser in this bathroom was a crisp ticket from Ticketmaster, crisp, from a Rilo Kiley show that had happened 10 to 12 years before that day. And it was just on
sitting there,
the soap dispenser. And I was like, what? I have it. It's at my parents' house.
Nice.
But I was like, what? I was like, this is so weird. And then I asked Jenny about it. I was like, do you remember playing a Fillmore? And she was as Rilo Kiley. And she was like, dude, that was so long ago. And I told her the story and she was like super freaked out. But isn't that weird? I've never been able to explain
it. How did that happen?
I've never been able to explain
it. Why did that happen?
I don't know why it happened. It's so specific to my life.
It was the gods of the Fillmore just reminding you where you came from.
100%.
You know, just getting you in touch. That's my venue, guys. Like, I grew up, that was my...
Darren's from San Francisco. It's such a good venue.
It's such a great... I'm sure you saw so many cool shows there.
I very well may have been at that Rilo Kiley show.
At that Rilo Kiley show?
I recall seeing them somewhere
else. Darren, did you put that ticket there?
I know. Did you put the ticket there?
Guys, okay, sorry. I'm going to reveal. This is the long con of my life. This has all been a ruse so I could get to this point in this podcast with you guys on the horn telling you about how I left this ticket. And I just prayed nobody would touch it.
That we would have a podcast and I would be able to talk about it.
Oh, man. I'd like to think that was my ticket. Let's not let the truth get in the way of a good story. You know, now that my memory is being very flexible, I do recall just placing
gingerly placing it on a soap dispenser.
It's so weird. Yeah. Honestly, it's the craziest story of my life. And it was on our first tour, on like the Days Are Gone tour.
I think it means we're on the right path. I think that was our ancestors' way of saying, guys are on the right path.
There is something really nice about that. I love that. Is a beautiful full circle moment. And not to mention the connection to me. I mean, Fillmore was sort of like my, I mean, we both grew up in cities with iconic venues, so we definitely saw a lot of bands that we loved. Clearly, we all went out to see music because we wanted to be a part of it in some way. For me in L.A., when I graduated, it was before my senior year. I came out to L.A. for like the first time as like a somewhat conscious adult. Now it seems funny because I was, you know, barely like 20. But I went to the famed Hotel Cafe, and this is 2007 or 8.
And oh, we were probably there.
We played there.
I was there to meet a couple of friends of mine that I had met through MySpace.
Nice.
Love.
You got to come. This is where singer-songwriters go. And like Sarah Bareilles was at the bar. And at this point in time, Sarah was kind of like the template. The, oh my God, songwriter, LA chick, UCLA, like a cappella turned. She crossed over from this sort of hotel cafe like ecosystem to like the mainstream. And I remember seeing her there and be like, all right, that's it. Fuck it. Coming to LA. Want to hang out with Sarah Bareilles in a bar. Like, this is amazing. So I totally know that.
She seems so sweet and nice.
Yeah, she's the tits.
Yeah, she's so nice. And yeah, we've played so many shows at Hotel Cafe.
I know. And a lot of them were when I was underage. I would have to stand outside and wait until our time slot, and then they would let me go in. That same thing happened at the Satellite, like when we played the Satellite. What did it used to be called? Spaceland. They would make me wait outside until our time, and then I would go in and play, and then I would have to leave immediately after.
I mean, you guys are rock and rollers. This is how it works. I'm going to ask about the touring thing really quick. I want to give my quick Sarah Bareilles story that I forgot, because this was kind of my mini sign.
Yeah.
I was visiting my friends who were at UCLA, because I had my school year ended a little earlier than theirs, so I would always come back to California and the UCs would still be going. And so I'd go visit, because it was either that or being at home, Alana, you know, when we're in that crossover.
I get
that crossover.
With that.
So you want to like go out and still kind of maintain this college life, but like at home. So anyway, I come back to California and I go visit my friends, and they were in Awaken, the a cappella group that she was in, and they were kind of clearing out a lot of old papers. And I was helping her move these boxes, I don't know what she was doing with them, but I found Sarah fucking Bareilles' audition sheet Awaken. And this is also again, this is 2008 or something. So she's fucking, she's still a Sarah Bareilles, but at this time, you know, I was extra sensitive. Like, oh my God, like I just bought her new record. Like, what the fuck? And it's so endearing and cute. And like the cute little letter is like age, like sophomore, like highest note. Like she writes all these cute little jokes. Like, I don't know. Depends what day it is. Ha ha. Like smiley face, stars. And it's just so endearing. And I'm like, I'm reading the childish like musings of like a master artist.
Like this.
And I took a picture of it, and I recently found it during the pandemic because I was going through all my photos from the past like 15 years of my life, and I found a photo of it because I didn't keep it, and I sent it to fucking Sarah Bareilles, and she was like, wow,
that's
this is
so
I
nice.
Remember writing
that's
this.
That is a full circle moment if I've ever heard
wild?
One.
Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, I always tell people I've spent, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way, I've spent a lifetime chasing my heroes. And I think the thing about you meeting and eventually playing for Jenny Lewis, Danielle, is that, you know, I always say idiomatically, like, oh, I can't believe it. But like also, of course I can believe it, because there is something about, I'll just use Jenny as an example, something about her that gravitates you to her. So you do a certain thing, amount of things in your life that, you know, are in an effort to maybe be in her presence. So it stands to reason that when you get there, you're like, yeah, this is right. You know, yeah. Like
just be a creep and go to her like boyfriend's pre-show.
And then he'll ask you to play. I like the alternate universe where you played music and you just sucked ass. He's like, yeah, play some music for me. And you just have to like, you don't know what
it's
you're
like
doing.
It's shreds.
I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, the shreds video.
It's just shreds.
I could play just enough drums to like kind of just, you know.
Get by.
Well, here's the question about touring, guys, because I'd like to, again, give our listeners a chance to really kind of know the inside of things. I think when we're talking about tours, we're talking about, you know, the songs are playing and the vibe we're going for, and ooh, it's going to be a lot of lights and so-and-so is opening for us, or this time we've got like a six-piece or whatever. And you're talking about the kind of mechanics of the performance. But I think, as you guys very well know, so much of the mechanics of touring is 90% of the shit is the stuff people do not see, and the kind of slog of what it can be. Essie and I have talked about this. We enjoy touring. A lot of bands, a lot of artists, it's a drag for them. And that's just that people are built differently. There's not like a prerequisite for either way. But my question for you guys, because you started touring so early, is it something that you, like, what have you learned over the years, or things that you had to learn? Because, you know, hey, do you want to come on tour? 10 days. Okay, you got to rehearse. You go, and suddenly you're like, fuck, I better like shed. I got to like not suck at the drum. There are so many things that you learn only from going on the road and playing the same show-ish, you know, give or take every night. So my question to you guys is, you know, it sounds like you all kind of got thrust into the touring thing before you were thrust into being recording artists, which are two different animals. So I don't know, Danielle, I'll start with you. Like, you know, when you're on this, do you remember being like, I'm out of my depth, or like, I know what I'm doing? Or like knowing your way around a pedal board and setting up your shit and taking, you know, like all this stuff. Was this stuff that was new, or was this stuff that you were like, I got like.
No, I mean, we've been playing music with our parents and playing gigs since we were like kids. So if anything, like before we even wrote a song, I mean, our parents weren't songwriters. They just loved music. So I'm sure, Esty, you've talked about our family band, Rockenheim, already, or have you not?
I'm waiting for the reunion.
Not as much.
Not as much.
There will be.
Well,
there always
you
is.
Know, it was basically, I feel like it was our parents' way of spending time with us, like, you know, spending quality time with us over the weekend, you know, instead of like going to, I don't even know, like going to play, you know, sports or something in the park or whatever. It was like, no, we're going to sit down and like learn some covers and play them in the living room. And then, like, you know, that was kind of our quality time as kids. So, and then we would have a couple shows per year, and, you know, we would like, our dad would drill, you know, our dad was very much into, you know, practice makes perfect. So there was definitely like every weekend there was at least 2 hours set aside. Like, we have to practice for our gig in 2 months. We'd be like, what?
What?
He's like, you have to practice, like practice, you know, practice makes perfect. So, you know, by the time it came to us actually writing songs, which was when I was going to community college right out of high school in 2007, before we even had a recording, you know, we were just playing shows, like I said before, just You know, we played a couple times a month, you know, at the Hotel Cafe, at Satellite, just anyone who would have us, you know, we would, you know, play a show. So before we had, again, our problem was that we couldn't understand how to record music. That was like a huge learning curve for us. We, you know, I think it was confusing watching all of these old, like, you know, documentaries and watching, you know, like people in the studio and everyone's just set up live and not understanding that it's, you don't just set up and play in a room. Like there's a whole art to engineering and to the art of recording.
Recording, yeah.
Recording these instruments. It's not, if you just stick a mic in the middle of the room, it's not going to sound like the way that it sounds in the room. It's just not going to sound that way. And it's not going to.
That's something that I think people don't really understand. You guys are an artifact of, I think, not artifact, I should say, you're an anomaly to how most music is produced nowadays. I think, you know, as early as, I would say, starting maybe 10 and some, a little less than 10 years ago, that paradigm sort of switched upside down, where it was for many decades throughout, you know, I would say basically until that somewhere in the 2000s, like if you were a band, you were a band and you played shows and then an A&R guy came in a la that thing, you know, somebody went, hey, you guys got it. Let's exactly. make a record of
which
this
is what
thing.
I thought it was going to be like.
That we right. thought that, that it was going to be real.
So what was yeah. so what was that moment for Chaim collectively? Because I know you guys were touring and doing different stuff, but when
we
did you decide?
Touring. We weren't touring. We were just playing in LA. Like we could never get out of yeah. LA. So like touring didn't happen until really it was like, so we had started our band in 2007. And I mean, in the next, I think, how many years? When we got signed in 2013?
No, 2012.
Who Tom Hanks this? Who from Columbia? From
so
like,
this
who,
is what happened. So basically, so from 2007 to 2011, we basically played in LA. Like we try. I mean, Danielle was also on tour. So like when she would come home, we would try to play as many gigs.
I was on tour, but my sisters were never on tour.
I was in high school. I was like in high school. Essie was in college. Every time Danielle would come home from tour, it would be like Waterworld.
Yeah, it would be like there is dry land.
It would literally be like there's water, like Waterworld style. Like she would like tell us the stories of the road and like tell us all these things, and then wow. we would just still play shows in LA. We play like the Troubadour, we play the Bootleg, we play the Satellite, we play Echo, the Echoplex. Like
was this
anyone
in,
that we
in,
could
in hopes of getting, you know, because this at
yeah.
this point
and
the indie artist
signed.
Thing doesn't really have.
I thought
the same
that this
thing.
Guy
a,
with like a. Yeah,
label,
I thought this
right?
guy with a cigar, I thought this like mythological character with a cigar and a contract was going to come to yeah. one of our shows and be like, don't even look at it, just sign it. And I would have been like, cool, like,
okay,
down, let's go,
yeah.
down. Like,
I've seen this movie, yes.
I've seen this movie and it always ends up right?
Yeah.
Like it always ends up going well. But that never happened. It really never happened. And so then after we
so
had-
So basically after I went on tour, so I toured with From the Jenny tour, I ended up getting this Julian Casablancas tour because they had the same manager at the time, and who was also I was also like a huge Strokes fan, and I've talked about it a lot that I was like basically got to go on tour with my two favorite artists ever.
People can listen to the other interviews. You've done plenty of interviews yeah. on it. You just look it up, guys. Just Google Julian Casablancas, Danielle Chaim. But continue.
It's there.
Yeah. No. It's there. But yeah. Again, like. Learned so much from him, but I remember kind of, you know, a few times being like, so I would ask him how he recorded, you know, Is This It, which was one of my favorite albums of all time. And also the first time I think I listened to the Strokes, it was, I think the first time I realized production or something like music production. Cause I was like, oh my God, wait, it sounds like lo-fi, but it also sounds like, I don't know. I just remember being like, you know, I think cause I was like in this rut of list, you know, watching MTV and I obviously like loved like Neptune's production, but I never thought that I could make music that sounded like the Neptunes or something. But I remember listening to like rock music and like nu metal and like Limp Bizkit and Korn. And then I remember hearing the Strokes and be like, oh my God, wait, this sounds like the stuff that I love from like the 70s, but it's new and the songwriting's amazing. And I think that was like the first time I understood like, whoa, like the drums can sound roomy and kind of like not every tom has to be mic'd or whatever. Like I just remember like as a 14 or 15 year old being like, wait, why does this sound different? But I never understood how to do that. Anyway, yeah. I remember asking Julian, like, how did you like do that? He's like, because in my mind, I was like, oh, it was probably so easy for, like, in my mind, I was just like, oh, like, they probably just set up in a room too. And like, just, it was their mics or whatever. But he, I remember him telling me, like, no, like, because I told him, like, every time we go into the studio, like, we can't get a good recording. It just sounds slick. And it sounds like, you know, I don't know what to ask for. And anyway, he was like, no, we went through the same thing. And like, I had to find the right guy and I had to, you know, figure out how to mic everything. Like, it was like a labor intensive thing. But in my mind, hearing that was like, oh shit, it takes more than just rehearsing your ass off for like 3 months to get into the studio. It's like, it's not that. It's not just killing at your instrument. It's like, you know, making sure that the parts are right and that it sounds right in the room. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
No, of course. I think something that people don't really understand about the transferability of the way music is written to the way it's received is it really does take a midwife that does understand the difference between people's ears and the artist's brain. I mean, people are prolific for this. I mean, if you think of the fucking, you know, I mean, God, Rick Rubins of the world and people who have their own methodology to kind of bring the two together. Cause it's weird. I remember asking Esty, or maybe one of you guys must've told me at some point that there was a period of time, Alana, you mentioned this, that you'd been playing for a significant amount of time and you had the songs and you had what is the Days Are Gone EP, but you had been re-recording it several times, right?
And
it's really hard to find that person that goes, okay, I think I know, because if you don't have the sort of nomenclature to kind of articulate what the difference is between an overdriven vocals and I like the drums to be kind of edgy, and they're like, okay, well, what do you mean? Like, do you want like a 70s kid? Like, right. You don't know how to like say,
well, actually,
these
like
things.
The thing that actually changed, I think, all of our lives was getting GarageBand, because everything is labeled and you can kind of play around with everything.
Yeah, that was the big aha moment, because, you know, for I think 4 years we were saving up all of our money to go into like a really nice studio for like one day and to
that's
like
what
bang
you did.
Out
you
five
need
songs.
Money for a studio, exactly.
Yeah.
That was the only way to get the fat guy with the cigar to give you the piece of paper to take your life
was
away.
To
get your shit to on. That's what we thought. Again, you know, home recording was a thing. We just didn't know how to do it. You know, we just thought you go into a nice studio, we mic it up,
and they'll do it for you.
We play, we rehearse for 3 months before, and then we fucking play our fucking hearts out in the room. Do a couple takes of each song and we're going to get our demo and we're going to like put it on MySpace and it's going to like, we're going to get, again, like we went through that like once a year for 4 years and every time we were like, why, you know, we would come out with this really awful sounding thing and not understand why. Again, we had like no fucking idea. So it wasn't until I got a laptop with GarageBand on it where I was like, oh, I can like mess around with these sounds, like, and I'm not having to be in like a studio for a day where we're spending all of our money, and I can just like plug in my guitar and put all these effects on it, and then also my voice, and I can put effects in my voice and see, yeah, like just everything in the box was like so eye-opening. It probably sounds so dumb for like, you know, to kids now or something, but it was like such a freeing.
Well, you're literally
experience.
Saying the timeline that I was kind of drawing out. There was a period where it shifted from artists needing a studio to kind of facilitate the kind of capturing of their thing to go out. And it kind of shifted once digital audio systems and interfaces became a thing, and not only a thing, but like an affordable, accessible thing to like kids, where suddenly you could go, oh fuck, like I can mess with this. And then that becomes your demo and you take out a middleman and a really expensive, impractical,
exactly,
like obstacle to the next step. And that is around the time where nowadays most people who are assigned in any medium of music are usually writer producers, and there's a whole number of them that you guys know and have worked with, that they just fucking do it. And it really, so that was when it changed for you guys. I would love to hear those original versions of
those. You wouldn't.
Like,
I'm dying.
Buried in my parents' yard.
I want
them.
Those NFTs.
Absolutely not, Darren.
What's
Chris.
The worst one?
They will
makes
never see
hardest?
The light of day.
We recorded The Wire like maybe
70
over,
times.
Like so many times.
What does it sound like? Give me a song that you like when you hear it. You
think
go,
of like a slick.
Sound.
Think of like the slickest drum production with like. You know, like a DW drum kit, like with
it's
a
really shiny, like,
yes. Shiny with slickest, like a kick, shiniest. Like a knock, like a kick that sounds like a knock, like a dinky. Yeah, it's just bad. Like there's just it's just it can.
You're
it's
only selling
so
it.
Wrong.
I feel like time enough time may have gone by to where it'll be cool. You
it's
know,
definitely like,
maybe.
Like on. It's definitely like on my like mom's old computer. Like I honestly don't even think we have them anymore. But like
we're almost
I
coming
search.
Up on 10 years of the shit, guys. Just pull a Taylor and like re put it out.
I think it has been 10 years. I think it has been 10 years.
Oh, probably.
Been 10
yeah,
years
you're right.
I think it has been. I have no idea.
Well, it's high time, guys. I want to hear that remix.
I'm gonna just sell it to you as an NFT. I'll sell it to you for $1.
Yeah, just we'll take out the middle line. Just give it to straight away. Just text it.
Yeah, great.
So this is an interesting thing, and Alana, I want to ask you this. Like, when music suddenly becomes, and this I love talking about this, especially people who are part of major labels. For better or for worse, we don't have to open up that box.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of things
I'm scared.
Well, I was going to say, you know, when you signed that proverbial contract with the metaphorical fat dude with the thing, which didn't exactly happen to you guys, but you did get a major label contract. Columbia is one of the most prestigious, like, of the top.
Well, actually, Columbia came later. So
oh, right.
What
X,
happened
was
it, so, no, what happened was basically it was a funny thing. So, so after Danielle
what was the
had,
question, though? What was the question?
Well, thank you, Danielle. I was going to say the question is, and then I want to hear how it kind of came to be, but the question is once you become a contracted recording artist, right? You are no longer just a touring band. You are your 9-to-5 job is to record music. And suddenly there's this shift in the way that you that your art is put out. It changes from doing shit for fun with your sisters to we have to make this many albums in this many years and we have to show up to work and come hell or high water, better have a fucking song. And this ruins some people. This is something that it weighs on
right.
A lot of artists because when commerce gets so, you know, injected into the output of art, it's a really tough conflict and some people can do that dance a little better than others. So I was going to say for you guys to have to now do this as a commercial sort of, this is your job. Like, was it something that you took to?
Yeah,
or was it-
I mean, but the thing is we actually are very like, I mean, we never really think of this as a job. I mean, I'm the luckiest girl on the planet that I even get to say that this is my job. But I think the thing is like, we were really lucky. We got signed out of the UK first.
Which label was that?
Polydor.
It was Polydor. I almost said
Polydor.
Which kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the UK versus US.
Yeah,
but yes.
UK
I'm going to bring it back
US
to that. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, so we were very lucky that, I mean, no. When I say no one, I mean absolutely no one wanted to sign us in the U.S. We had done South by Southwest. We had done all these showcases. We had played all the shows. We had played a million shows. And all we heard was no. And so we eventually, we had this EP called the Forever EP that we put out. On our
Forever
on
EP,
our,
not the Days Are Gone.
Days Are Gone was later, but the Forever EP, which had Forever and Better Off, and we ended up putting it out on our website, literally just like HiImTheBand.com, and it was like the only thing you could see was like this, like you could download it for free, and because
and I ended up leaking it a day early on accident.
Leaked it a day early, of course. Yeah. She did. But anyway, so we are Better Off, one of the songs on the EP, got started to get played on the radio in the UK. And so we were like, what is going on? Like, that's crazy. It's getting, because being played on the
just
US, I don't know
band.
If anyone
you didn't
knows.
Have any
yeah, no, we had nothing.
Or...
We were nothing. We all we had was our guitars and our minds. That's all we had. So we had heard that our songs being played on the radio and we like didn't really believe it. But then all of a sudden, like, it kind of felt like there was something happening in the UK and we didn't really know, but we kind of wanted to see for ourselves. So we literally got on a plane. I thought we were going to, you know, just go there for like a couple like for like maybe a week, and we played a couple shows in the UK, and we didn't know at the time, but all the people that were at the shows ended up being people from labels, but we were just like, we had no idea. And then we were there, I think, for like 2 weeks, and after 2 weeks, Polydor came forth. And the reason why we went with Polydor was really because they were like, we just want you to do what you do. Like, we have no, we don't want to like change you. We want you to make music the way you want to make music. And out of everyone that we met with, they were the only people that said that. And I will say to this day that they have stayed true to their word. And we,
that's awesome.
We take our time making records. I mean, our second record, we took our time. And our first record, we took our time. I mean, we love taking our time with records. This one actually came out a lot faster than normal, but
maybe we're finally getting the hang of it.
But the thing is, it's like, yeah, we really, I mean, do
it's,
care.
It's a learning
we
curve.
Care a lot about, we care a lot about, you know, making our records, and we love making records, not just songs. And our records, we want them to be an experience when you listen to them. We know we want it to be like from front to back. You can just put it on and keep it on. And our label, thankfully, Polydor was just like, great. And I mean, we, on our last record, especially with like Summer Girl, we had shot the video, we had made the song, we had finished it, and at the last second, we forgot that we have to show our label. Like, we like literally forgot. We were like, oh shit. Like, we have to tell people that this is happening. Cause we were gonna just like put it out. We didn't even, I mean, we were like, we know how to upload something on YouTube. Like, we could do this. Like, it's fine. And finally, we were like, oh, shit, we should probably like tell someone. And they were like, wait a second. They were like, okay, like, just, oh, this is happening. Like, I was like, this is happening. This is happening.
We're like, it's happening.
And they were cool with it.
Polydor.
Well, Columbia, too. But, like, the thing is, we were signed first to Polydor. So, like, we have, like,
it's a
they're kind of like.
Polydor is your first, your main school.
Yeah, we're like, they were, like, the first people that really were, like, we love you. And, like, we, again, like, no one wanted to sign us. And we were very close to just being like, well, I guess we're never going to get signed because, like, I had never even been to the UK before until that point. Like, not even, like, for, like, a family vacation.
Esty included in that statement.
So I was just like, I'm going to this place. I've never been here before. And then
experience.
And then everything kind of happened super quickly. And I was like, and it did kind of feel like that thing you do or something like that, where it was just like, wait, we're getting played on the radio, like when they're running on the streets and like Liv Tyler's like licking a Post-it.
Moment? You guys heard your shit on the radio,
like,
in the UK?
Like, we had heard Better Off on the radio, and we were like, what is going on? Like,
wow,
I
Better Off? Do you remember what station it was on?
It was on
XFM?
No, not XFM. Oh my God!
Do you remember
Marianne Hobbs?
Marianne Hobbs.
It was XFM.
But it was one of like the more alt leaning stations, right? It wasn't like
and it was a huge deal.
No, still not to this day.
Not pop at all. It was like a rock station, and like still to this day,
I had no idea.
I
could have sworn it would have been like Forever or Wire.
No, it was Better Off. It was Better Off, and like that's why we are so indebted to the UK. Like, they gave us our first show. Like, we toured the UK after this whole thing happened, and we ended up signing our deal and then making Days Are Gone. We did 9 UK European tours. 9 in a year. Or 2 years.
In two years, we did 9.
You cover a lot of ground. The UK is not.
Yeah, we just kept going around and around and around and around. And, like, it was the best. I mean, the thing that's, like, being in a van, like those like early days of like being in a van, like just like not even understanding what the fuck is going on, but being like, this is actually happening, and like we're touring, like what, like I
was the best time.
It's the best time.
Yeah,
it's still
you
the
just
best
gave
time.
Me goosebumps. I know those days in a different version.
Yeah,
right?
And it still is not lost to me. I mean, like I've heard Forever on the radio on Sirius XMU the other day, and I was like, this still fucking freaks me out. It's like, what? Like, we're on the radio? Like, it's just so weird.
I mean,
it's still
I work
weird.
Out to you guys.
Thank you. But yeah,
not even
so
consciously.
Like,
I just leave shit on and then you come on. I mean,
great workout music.
But yeah, so like it really did. It was all by chance. There was no plan. We were really just flying by the seat of our pants and kind of just like following the wave and like where the like the wind was taking us. We were kind of just
but
like.
But that is the most
around.
Ideal version, because everything that you're telling me seems to come back to the universe letting you do you. And how that is being the guiding light, like the less hands that are kind of meddling with what they think you could be or the things that you think you should do instead. There seems to be a pretty big lack of that. And the moment that you were allowed to just be you, I don't find any fucking coincidence, is when the rocket ship took off. And that is so beautiful to me.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There were a lot of people that told us, like, I don't get it. Like, I don't get you. Right. I don't like you.
But a lot of people would say, like, I don't get it either. Okay, tell you what, I'm going to start, I'm going to learn, I'm going to be in a different kind of band.
Totally.
Learn this
and
or
like,
that,
we were just very, like, we knew, we like, I don't know why. I don't know how we had, like, we were just so laser focused. The second that we got to the UK, it was like, we were so laser focused on what we wanted. And we got a lot of people saying, like, still, like, it wasn't like this, like, you know, like, fairy tale. Like, we still had people saying, like, you guys are never gonna do this. Like,
but I think at the time, I think we were just so stoked to be playing
outside
of the, just to be playing in general, but also, like, we're playing in London. Like, this is fucking cool.
I've seen this in history books.
Yeah, like,
you guys, speaking of history, you guys know that I'm thinking of all the bands that I love that have, you now share the same narrative. I'm gonna go backwards from you. Haim, Kings of Leon, The Killers, and most notably and famously, Jimi Hendrix.
Tom Petty.
Mm-hmm.
Petty was the same thing. Petty, because they love Americana.
The White Stripes. Yeah.
The Strokes.
I guess the Stripes was, I didn't realize the Strokes were the same. I always thought they were just New York royalty since they were born.
No. They were signed to Rough Trade first.
Whoa.
Which is a UK label.
Yeah,
I know. That's...
I know,
I
believe
that.
Me.
I mean, okay. I mean,
like, to share that history is
the Pretenders.
Big, yeah, the Pretenders.
I'm sure there's so many more.
There's
so many.
I'm going to pause just for our listeners. What I'm talking about is there, and this will be full circuit of what we were talking about when we started this conversation, which is there are a number of bands and artists that are American and have a very American sound. I'm using quote fingers, whatever the fuck that even means. That for whatever reason don't really break through in the United States, depending on the era. Radio isn't happening, the label thing isn't happening. And I'll just use Jimmy as an example. Jimmy famously went to the UK during, like, you know, the Brit invasion. He did the inverse of the Brit invasion. The Brit invasion happened in the kind of early mid 60s, and he left in the late 60s to go, or I think probably around the same time, to go play with just like a band and be Jimi fucking Hendrix. And he, like, took the fuck off there. And so he kind of gathered his ammunition there. And then by the time he came to the States, it was like what the Beatles did when they came to the States. Like, he had to go away to come home, to have his own homecoming.
Right.
And that happened with a bunch of bands that just didn't, quote, work in the States. And for some reason, the UK just has an affinity for some, maybe it's the Americana-ness of it, but there is some... something in the water, some algorithm that if any of us knew the answer to, we'd all be fucking crushing it in the UK.
I also think that I think the UK as a whole, I think the people just in general they have such a thirst for new music, like they can't get enough of it. And I think they're just all around music lovers. I think that there's some of that in the States, but I think it's exponentially true in the UK. And that's also why I love it so much there, because people just... They love their music, you know?
Really quick, see if you can answer this question. Danny, I know you got to go. Worst show you've ever played. Go.
Ooh.
Worst show. Oh, my God. I fucked it. My thing went blah. That morning I was
God.
Blah. Worst show ever.
I know what mine is.
Fuck. This is... Oh, God.
I can't...
No, I'm trying to think my worst show. Well, maybe my worst show was one night actually on tour with Julian. And I was like, I had never drank before a show because I don't know. I just never did that. I was like always very like, you know, I was like, I need to be professional. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to like smoke weed before I like play. I'm going to do that after because I don't know why. I just was like, I need to be a professional musician. This is a big deal.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm not a rock star. I'm a musician.
No. So I remember one night, it was like after like 2 months of touring, like maybe some of the band was drinking or something. And I was like, I'm just going to get drunk. This is going to be fun. This is going to be an experiment. I forget where we were, but shit, does that kind of not I don't remember where it was.
No, keep going.
But anyway, I got pretty fucking drunk and I learned on stage that like I cannot, I was playing like percussion and guitar. I cannot play in time. Like I was fucking up so bad. Like there was one part where I was doing like, I would do this like 16th note with
the hi-hat
with the
thing?
Other drummer. No. Like a kick where I had to do the off kick. So it was like, do, but I was doing every off one. So like, anyway,
yeah,
exactly. So I was like, dun, 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 dun. And I could not fuck it. Like I could, anything I played like a 16th note off. Like it was just like not, I was so behind.
I mean, that's hard enough sober.
Yeah. You would think that being behind was good.
No.
Because it's like funky, but not when like the rest of the band, it's like you're supposed to be like, I was the percussionist. I wasn't the drummer. So I had to be following everyone. So me like fucking up and being behind like was just awful. And like,
did you have like a talking to? Because you got to learn that
no,
at some point.
Thank
like,
God.
Well, I guess I can't do
thank
that anymore.
No, I didn't. But like, I definitely was getting looks throughout the whole set. Like, what is going on? Like, stop fucking up, you know, by the rest of the band.
See, even Danielle.
But yeah, I've never drank during a show. I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe I should try again. I'm just like too nervous that I would fuck
it up.
I know.
We don't drink on tour. We're like we're definitely not rock stars like that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I drink like a fucking fish.
No, I've never had
so
like a bender tour, like because
but
I'm
always
so
after
jealous.
The show, never before a show.
Oh, totally.
It's
mean,
always after.
Yeah,
every
after
time
the show.
Yeah,
that will do.
Well, kind
yeah,
of. I don't want to get sick. I don't want to get sick. So
I
like never
yeah.
on stage, like playing drums. Like I just can't. And then when I had to pick up the guitar, I was like over. I was like really overthinking. Like, am I playing the right thing? Like it was just, it was a mess. It was a mess.
Well, now I'm going to look for this show if anybody recorded it and see how behind those 16ths.
I don't know where it was.
Maybe it was like subdivided. Maybe it was like some cool polyrhythmic shit and it ended up being really
exactly,
cool.
There's just like a video that's called like Girl Fails yeah. on Julian Casablancas tour.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Dan, if you got to go, go for it.
Sorry,
bye,
guys.
You.
We'll do a part two.
Yeah.
I know. We're
I'll
here.
I'll do a part two or I'll talk about.
We'll talk about what that thing Danielle does.
Yes.
Yeah. Which was apparently get fucked up once to not play, you know, the 16th off beats. Go do your thing. Thank you for joining us, Danny. We're going to
okay,
finish this
of
off
course.
With your littlest
love
sister.
You. Have fun.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Well, you're the less fun sister is here.
Worst show you ever played?
Worst show I ever played was on the sisters. It wasn't like the show was bad. I honestly, like, the thing about playing live that I love is, like, when you fuck up, it's actually, like, makes the show more special, but like I've never really had like a crazy fuck up on a show, even though, well, because like I'm like a machine at this point. Like I have such a crazy like my side of the stage, I have like such a crazy, what is it called, like a station, my station
yeah,
is crazy
rig. Yeah, yeah,
my rig is insane. Yeah, there's a lot, there's now I'm adding congas to my rig, it's like a whole thing. But the I like very much like specifically remember the last show of the Sister tour, when we were playing the drum ending, I got so into it because it was like the last show and it was like the last time I was going to play this like drum ending that I like lunch. And also this was after months of touring and eating like pizza and tacos and shit. And we had these like PVC pants that we were wearing every night. I like hit the drum so hard that my whole pants exploded, like fully
in
exploded in the back, just ass out, pants exploded. And I was like, holy shit. And
I got
off stage.
What do you mean they explode? Like you
like,
shat
literally,
yourself?
No. No, I didn't shat myself. Like they just like the seam just ripped. And I just like the pants just like came on. Like it was just like full down the middle pants. Never gonna be rehab. Just like
split right down the middle.
Split right down the middle, and I was like, "Fuck!" Well, and I was like, "You know what? At least it was my last show."
Were you
like,
behind the rig? So this was perhaps
yeah.
Maybe
no one could see it. No one could see it. And so then
that's a shame.
Then
that's
at
really
the
funny.
Very end, so then I was like so tired, and I was like honestly like kind of like lamenting to my sisters, like, "Oh, you guys, like, I exploded my pants. Like, my pants don't fit anymore." Like. I'm kind of feeling down about myself. And like Essie and Danielle were like, dude, it's fine. Like, don't worry about it. Like, you're beautiful. Like, being like the best sisters ever. And I was like, thanks, guys. And I sat down on a couch and the front exploded. Like, then the front, just the zipper, just split.
I needed the symmetry.
The zipper just split. So then literally, like, these pants just, like, basically disintegrated off of me. And I was just like, I've never been more down on myself. I know. Yeah. My pants, like, held on for the last.
Yeah.
The last. And I actually found a video of it on my phone the other day, which made me remind, which reminded me of it.
What was your face doing?
No, it wasn't, like, it was just the aftermath. It was just, like, showing my pants just being, did it go, just, like, broken.
Oh, my pants.
No, I was more just like crying and feeling really shitty about my myself.
I mean,
myself.
if that's the worst show you've ever played, you could do a lot worse.
I mean,
your
I'm
pants
sure there was.
Splitting.
I'm sure there. I fucked up so hard on shows, but the
I was
thing
really
that's
hoping
great,
you'd
I
say
loved
that, like,
it.
You listen back and then your harmony sounding shit, or even better, which I always feel bad for the band, is when you don't stick a landing at the end of a song. You know
that happens all the time, but the thing is like, at the end of the day, like, we're a band, and like, you're
right,
not supposed to be perfect. You're not supposed to be perfect. Like, actually, like, it's hard to be perfect, you know, playing live, and we're not perfect because we're a band, and the thing is, like, imperfections kind of make it what it is, and it's not bad to be imperfect. You do the best you can. I mean, we practice so hard. You could practice for, you know, millions and millions of hours and still, you know, hit a
forget
bum note and
forget.
Yeah, there's sometimes where I look at my hands playing piano and they're just moving and I'm like,
yeah, you're like what
am
I doing?
Happening?
Yeah, yeah, I totally know that.
Is this?
And then
and I'm
you,
just
then you
like
start
letting,
thinking about it and you fuck it up.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, I'm just going to let my hand, like, they've done this a million times. I'm just going to let them kind of do their thing. But yeah, no, the thing is, yeah, of course, there's always times where I hear myself and I'm like, Jesus Christ, Alana, like, get it together. But the thing is like, there's always another show. So I'm sure there is like a really terrible show that I've ever played, but I don't mind. It's a show and I go as hard as I can. I go as hard as I can every single show. There's not one show that I don't like leave a bucket of sweat on the stage.
I can vouch for that. As having seen, I've lost track how many times I've seen you guys play. And I think that's pretty consistent.
Accurate.
Thank you.
You asked earlier, you thought you were going to talk about the other things you do. And we're talking about that thing you do. And
I do.
We
do
a lot of things.
And yes.
Touring and recording is a thing you do, so
I do.
It's not like we didn't talk about the
thing you do. No, and I love talking about this thing that I do.
To be fair, that's how I sold this podcast to Danielle and Alana.
No.
And
I fucking
you didn't
blew it.
No. You didn't blow anything. I was just like, I really had to think to myself, like, what else do you do?
What is that you do here?
Because don't do a lot other than playing music. Like, I honestly don't. Like, I don't have that many hobbies. I mean, I of course dabble in many things. I love being, you know, creative, but music is the main thing that I do. And I really had to, like, sit with myself and be like, what else do you do?
You do a lot of other stuff, though, Lons.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting.
Well, what I had prepared.
Yes. What is it that you do,
well,
Alana?
I have like a crazy irrational fear of cooking. Like, and I'm not saying that because I'm lazy. Like, I legitimately have like an irrational fear of like poisoning people with food that like I don't cook properly. So like cooking a meal is like a huge like endeavor for me. Like especially if I'm like cooking for my friends, like I'll call them like every hour and just be like, have you thrown up? Like, are you okay? Like, was the chicken cooked enough?
So the fear is more based in the food product being subpar or even, dare I say, dangerous. Not so much the preparation.
It's not even like it's
like cutting
if it
your hand,
bad.
Chopping onions.
No.
Oh, no. That I'm like, game on. Like, I'm totally fine.
End product is your fear.
My fear is like poisoning by accident.
Salmonella.
Like salmonella. That's like my biggest fear is like my friends being like, you poisoned me with your chicken dish that I came to eat because you told me to come over. And that's like my biggest fear.
I'm sure there are psychologists that could bend this into it not being too dissimilar from making music. I mean,
I'm
you
sure.
do cook music for a living. And there are people that might, in your worst nightmares, go, it doesn't taste good.
Yes. I mean, that happens every day. on Twitter.
Yeah.
So I
that
feel
must
that.
Be connected to that somewhere.
But yes, I don't know. Or I have no idea. I mean, I'm sure. I have no idea where
what
it comes
a specific
from. But basically,
fear.
I know. It's a very crazy fear that I'm like, honestly, like getting over. Like, I have to like actively like. Like, Postmates was the worst thing to ever happen to me because I'm like, okay, cool. I mean, my bank account is not stoked, but my fear is like, fuck yeah, keep going, order, because you don't want to poison people.
You don't have to worry about other people poisoning you. It's just you poisoning
then it's
the
on,
people.
It's not on me. It's not on me if people get poisoned when I order food.
To be fair, she hasn't done this to anyone.
I've never done it also. So like, that's also super weird. Like, I've never, anyways, this is like a very long-winded story about why, what I do. So basically, because I have such a big fear about cooking, I weirdly don't have a fear of baking. Like, baking.
For those of you that can't see, Darren is fully spiraling and confused.
No, I want to understand this. I'm here to learn. Please.
So. I understand.
Basically, because for cooking, there's a lot of variables with cooking, like some people like just add a little salt and you're like, well, how much is a little salt? Like,
it's much more improvisatory. Baking is very precise. Yes,
baking is like, if you follow the recipe to a T, you will come out with the right thing, like a version of the right thing. If it's like hard, like if you're making like a croissant, that shit's hard. Like, don't get me wrong, like, that shit takes skill. But like baking a cake, if you follow that recipe to a T, you're going to come out with a cake.
I mean, you could fuck up on the heat. You could have an underproofed
dough. I am like so crazy about following directions and also like watching videos. Like to the point where like what I do to like wind down, especially, I mean, this was way before the pandemic too. Like I've been baking since I was like a kid. I just like loved the art of baking.
It was actually Alana's job to bake the brownies after Danielle and I would get high.
That's true. That is the truth. I would bake
normal brownies.
I see Danielle brown. Oh yeah, normal brownies. But I was like, no. They'd also just say, "Will you make us brownies?" I was like fucking six or seven. They'd be like, "Will you make us brownies?" And I'd be like, "Oh my god, my sisters think I'm a good baker. This is the best day of my life." Little did I know they were stoned. But yeah, so like I I'm obsessed with baking, and if you ever need, that was what I prepared. That was my spiel. That was my type five about what I do.
That's the thing she does.
Well, I think it's safe to say that the things that you do are, I don't know. Help me out, Esty. I ran out of gas.
I will say this. The things that my sisters do, pretty much 99.9% of those things I'm aware of and I knew about. So I didn't learn anything new. That's what I'm saying. It makes a lot of sense because I've known these two lovely ladies my entire life. However, I love that Darren learned something new today.
And I hope our listeners learned things as well. And, and I also skimmed the surface on things that I know you've talked about a million times. A lot of the kind of more fine details of those tours and people you played with and records and stuff. I highly encourage everybody who aren't already fans of this podcast, if you don't know the discography of Haim, including that original EP that we mentioned a few times, definitely go check it out. That's the Forever EP, which would eventually turn into the studio
Thank
album.
Thank you, Darren. Yes.
Go listen to their music, you know?
Go
see why they got those.
Stream it.
Those Brit Awards. See where it all came from.
And, you know, I do think this will be we'll do a part two.
I think so. There's going to have to be a
100%.
Women in Music part two.
Yeah, we'll do that thing I do in music part two. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, that'll make sense if you're a Haim fan.
If you're a Haim fan,
hopefully
maybe.
Everybody is now after having listened to this whole thing. Alana, thank you for your time and hanging out with us. And
Darren.
For, as the other young, I'm the youngest sibling as well, so I see you.
I see you. I feel you. You have an incredible, I will say, you have a great podcast voice.
Right?
It's the sultry getting up on the microphone thing.
I know. And let me tell you, I'm in. I'm in for this podcast voice. Thank you for having me on your podcast,
guys.
Thank
you very much.
I really appreciate being here.
Darren, how fun was that? I mean,
that
I think
that
we're still kind of getting our sea legs. We're figuring out this podcast as we
go.
I'm figuring
out how to interview more than one person because you also are part of the group Haim.
I know.
So I was kind of neglecting you, but you're also a co-host. So I didn't really know how to and who to.
I did not feel neglected whatsoever. I was having a great time watching you talk to Danielle and Alana. Aren't they the best?
They're the best. It's really fun just talking music with musicians who I really like. What can I say? There's no other way around it. Like,
Thank you, Darren. Those questions
were not prescribed questions. Those were very much questions from, you know, like the smaller versions of you guys looking at Jenny Lewis is me looking at you guys because, you know, you guys have managed to pull off a lot of shit that is really inspiring. So it's cool to hear the way you guys think about that stuff. And I meant when I said it's a cool thing. You guys are an anomaly. And I don't want to say a dying breed because I don't want to believe that. But it is more rare to see bands that get on their way as being a band and then becoming recording artists as opposed to the other way around.
Yes.
Not like there's a right or wrong way, but there is still something magical about the former, and you guys have done that in spades. So it's really cool to see how and why that works and the way that your sisters have responded to it and the way that, you know, I wanted to get more into like the learning curve of recording and writing songs, but you know, that's its own episode.
We can still talk about that. We're going to do a part two. We have to.
Yeah, we'll get into that because it's a really interesting thing, I think, hopefully for our listeners to kind of see these sides of... I mentioned this with touring. I said 90% of the stuff that goes into touring is stuff that you don't see. But what that is actually attached to is this notion that I have of being an artist is, I think, people, by the time you see and experience the thing that an artist is making, you are really seeing only like 10% of what that artist has been putting into, because most of the stuff has been done behind the scenes, like the hustle, the recording, and then the tedium of writing and the frustration and the compromise and all the stuff. There's really so much going on. And a big chunk of that, if you're a recording artist, is like learning what it is to like capture music on a record, which isn't easy.
That's also something interesting we can get into maybe next week, maybe the week
maybe
after.
Next time.
Maybe we'll talk to other musicians about that.
Yes, please. That'd be great.
But I love you so much. Maybe next week we'll be in the same room.
Maybe we will. I'm going
to. Maybe we will, Darren.
I'm going to manifest destiny. I'm going to kind of broadcast it to the universe and hope that it gets to happen.
I love you so much.
Love you. That was great. Thanks for getting the sisters on. And we'll see you next week, guys.
See you next week. Love you all.
That Thing I Do is a presentation of Cadence 13 Studios.
If you like the show, which I know you do, please be sure to like us, follow us, and leave a glowing review.
Thank you for listening to our show. We'll see you next time.